That was beautiful. Thank you to the choir. So several of you send forwarded emails to me with jokes and church stories, and some of them are better than others. But I found a couple. Yeah, that was supposed to be funny. A couple of people have sent me things lately, and Leon Green sent me some things I wanted to share with you. They have nothing to do with anything else, but I just thought they were funny. So the first one is that Angie, who was 6 years old, and her four-year-old brother were sitting together in church, and Joel was giggling and singing and talking out loud, as four-year-olds tend to do. And finally, his big sister had had enough. His decorum just was not acceptable. And she said, "You're not supposed to talk out loud in church." "Well, why? And who's going to stop me?" he asked. And Angie looked around toward the back, and she pointed, "See those people at the back of the church, at the back door? They're hushers." Another. A mother was preparing some pancakes for her sons. They were 5 and 3, and the boys began to argue between them about who would get the first pancake. So their mom, being a moral person herself, said, "Well, you know, if Jesus were sitting here, he would say, 'Let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait.'" So Kevin turns to his younger brother and he says, "Ryan, you get to be Jesus." Okay, enough of that. This week, Paul and I are going to Minister's Week down in at Phillips in Tulsa. He talks about seminary all the time, and he made me jealous, so I'm going back. Actually, most seminaries have a week a year where they invite former students to come and to do continuing education. And this week, it's Tuesday to Thursday. It's not the whole week. But this week we will be there learning about worship, and the title of the event is called Remind and Renew, and Ruth Duck is the keynote speaker. She is a lyricist, a hymn writer, a worship writer, and I'm very excited to bring back some new things that she's written that she may share with us. Also this week, Monday at 2 o'clock in the downstairs conference room, we're starting a grief group, and this group is for anyone experiencing grief and loss. Doesn't have to be within the last X number of months. I will tell you that when my sister died, going to a grief group for siblings was the lifesaver for me in my grief process. So I hope you will come. Everyone is welcome. And 2 o'clock Monday in the downstairs conference room. Also, you'll notice an insert in your bulletin about the Super Bowl party at First Presbyterian Church. And I'll be, as usual, saving a table for UCC people. Come and join me for lunch, get a bowl of soup or three, and support this homeless ministry, as well as the Martin Luther King celebration next weekend. And the information about that is also in your bulletin. So today we begin a new series on tough theological questions. And in the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring things like, what is the nature of God, and is there one God or many gods? What is the purpose of prayer? Is there a God, and is God active in our world? What can you believe about Jesus' resurrection? And next week is, what is salvation, being born, and is there a heaven? So the tough theological question for today is, why would a loving God allow innocent suffering? Have you asked that question, or anyone you know ever asked you that question? It's kind of one of the basic questions of humanity. It's plagued us for centuries, and it's not as simple as it sounds at first, because the answer to this question is rooted in God's nature, the way the universe is set up, and human nature. If you want to read more on this issue, look up the word theodicy. Theodicy is a riddle. Libraries have been written about it, and it asks those tough questions. Also, take a look in the bulletin for some insightful and some funny quotes about chocolate and broccoli, and the traditional word from 2 Corinthians. So I remember asking this question, why would a loving God allow innocent suffering of my grandmother? She was almost 90 at the time, and having been a third grade Sunday school teacher for decades, I figured she knew about these things. Ah, yes, she said, an old, old question. And she picked at her teeth. Are you prepared to find the answer, she asked. It will take some thinking, honey, and answering some other questions first. I'm ready, I said. Well, she began, since you asked such a difficult question, let's begin with talking about God. You know, God is the root of all questions and all good answers. Of course, I said. Well, why do you suppose that God made us in the first place, honey? She asked, and she produced a big tablet of paper like I used in grade school and a large pencil. Why did God make us? She asked again. Write it out. Well, I thought about the lessons we learned in about creation, and I thought about God existing in the chaos with no place, no substance, no creation, and I thought about Genesis, and then I looked at the paper, and I wrote, God made us to share life and love. Now, instead of complimenting me on my great thought processes or my great theology, the depth of my clear intelligence, my concise answer, or even my neat handwriting, she simply went on. Lesson two, she said. Well, wait a minute, I don't get it. I said, how does lesson one fit into my question of how a loving God allows suffering? Lesson two, she said. Why does God allow people to do unjust, mean, evil things to others? Why doesn't God just make people who overeat share food with the people who are hungry? And why doesn't God cause people who love each other and their children whom they love, why doesn't God make them love each other perfectly? Well, I've been married long enough to know a little bit about that, Grandma, I said. You know, if Eric had no choice other than to act like a puppet, doing all the things that I secretly wanted him to do, it wouldn't mean anything when he whispered in my ear, I love you, you beautiful, wonderful, intelligent, sweet love of my life. Even if I would like to hear it, and I wrote it out for him, if he was made to say those things, it wouldn't mean anything since he was forced to act the way I wanted him to. You notice he's not here today. He read the sermon. Again, she gave me the pencil. So what have you learned, she asked me, about really loving and sharing someone's life? I thought about it, and I wrote down, love and sharing require choice. But now I'm really confused, I said to my grandma. She was patient. I suppose when you're 90, you learn patience. She said, from lesson one, you learned why God made us, to share life and love. And from this lesson, you learned that God allows people choice so that love can be real. Stick with me, she said. Now lesson three, write down what you know about God. So I made two lists, things I believed about God and things I didn't believe about God. And on the list of God isn't, I put unjust, immoral, liar, hate, violence, cruelty, and evil. And on the list of things I know about God, I put justice, holiness, truth, love, grace, peace, kindness, and goodness. "Are you ready to tie it all together?" she asked. And she put a plate of warm cookies on the table for me. Theology is truly hard work. I muttered, "I'm still a little fuzzy." "Okay," she said. "Why does God allow a child to bear the scars of a parent's abuse? Why does God let children make fun of classmates who are different? Why does God let a husband and a wife who love each other fight and divorce? Why?" "Enough," I said. "You're wearing me out." This was my question. "Wears God out too," she said. At any moment, people can choose God's way or not God's way. The choices are real, so the consequences are real. But when we choose something that is good, something that's loving and just and peaceful or right, sometimes it hurts someone. "You still haven't answered my question," I said. "Well, you see, we live in a world that is not perfect, with people who aren't perfect, with machines and schedules and crowded lives. Each of us make choices minute by minute, and we don't always make the best choices. And on top of that, there are millions of other people out there making choices and messing up occasionally. Our best intentions can't change that." "Okay, I think I understand the choice thing. But sometimes bad things are just sort of random. You know, good people get cancer, and it's not like anyone made a bad choice." "That's the hardest part," she said, and her eyes grew sad. "Things happen to good people through no obvious fault of their own or anyone else's. And when that happens, we all look to the sky, to God, for an explanation. Some people even say that God uses those bad things to bring about an ultimate good." "I think that's a bunch of hooey," I said, except that I did expose all three of my children to chicken pox at the same time so that I could deal with three sick kids for a week rather than one sick kid for a month. "But it is repugnant to think about God zapping one person with cancer and another with the loss of a child so that they can become stronger." My grandma was animated at this point. And sometimes she said, "People do get more than they can handle." I put my pencil down. "Is it possible that God isn't in charge of all that happens in the world?" I whispered. "Well, now that's pretty radical," said my grandma. "And you know you can't just go around saying something like that, especially not at church." "But," I said, "what if God isn't a big guy in the sky who looks down on the world and moves creation around with strings, controlling and manipulating and infecting and healing and answering some prayers and not others?" And she jumped in. "And what if God is the connection that we have to one another? What if taking soup and cookies to someone who is ill is the healing that God provides? What if someone becoming a foster parent is the care that God provides? What if our actions, visiting the sick, advocating for the poor, reaching out to the lost, funding health care for people who can't afford it, making a difference in someone's day, what if those are the ways that God alleviates suffering in our world?" She stood up. "Well, that's lesson four and the final lesson for today." And I realized she had brought me full circle. I started out with God's love for us, and I ended up with our love for each other and for God. And somewhere in the middle, I learned that choices come with love, and we don't always choose wisely. And I learned that we like to blame God for our inactivity and injustice. And that maybe, just maybe, God's not in charge of the bad things that happen to good people. So next time, when I get up the nerve, I think I'm going to ask Grandma about the birds and the bees. As you're able, please stand and let's sing our choral benediction together.